Okay, we'll get this going. Make sure it's going. Oh, do that with some backup. Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. And we're going to work Jeremiah for a while yet, but I probably will move out of it for the next couple of weeks or so. And we'll just be, we're kind of going to survey Jeremiah this morning, in Jeremiah this morning. And again, we're dealing with doctrine that we believe, and we see prophecy here. But it's doctrine that we don't get our practice from, but we do learn from it, but we do learn about God as well. And as we look at the prophecies, as we've seen it through Jeremiah, God made promises to Israel, and they took place. And this morning we'll see the fulfillment of some of these prophecies as we move along, and the next time we are in Jeremiah, we'll notice we'll come to a reference, that a passage that does deal with absolute fulfillment, just as God said it would happen. And yet we're going to be moving into more prophecy, dealing with the promises of God pertaining to Israel and some of his judgments upon Israel, as the prophecies have been given through Jeremiah the prophet. And when we look at Jeremiah, Jeremiah's been going through some very serious he's been persecuted because he is the prophet of Jehovah, and because he gives the prophecy from Jehovah that isn't popular, he does suffer persecution. And we'll see a little more of that today as we step into the context with King Zedekiah again. Now, the last couple of weeks, we looked at two chapters, 35 and 36. They step back to the days of Jehoiakim. I don't know how I got Jeroboam. He's of the wrong tribe, wrong kingdom. But anyway, Jehoiakim. And we had some specific years given, his fifth and his fourth and fifth years, which would be 605 down to 604 B.C., as he inserted that into some of the information that he was giving concerning Zedekiah. Back in chapter 32, we saw Zedekiah incarcerated Jeremiah because of his message against him and against the city of Jerusalem and against the southern kingdom Judah. And so he locked him up in the courtyard and didn't quite know what to do with him, but he didn't like the prophecy, so he incarcerates him there. Then we've moved on, and we've seen what happened there. But now we come down to about 588 BC, when Zedekiah comes on the scene. And this is where we'll be picking up this morning in chapter 37. And as we do, we'll go back and look at the background again. I'm going to go back and see the setting for this chapter as he inserts it here. He doesn't write chronologically, but he does insert things for emphasis where he puts them. So he stepped back to Jehoiakim, but we'll see that Jehoiakim is the next in line as he now picks up with the beginning of Zedekiah and his reign. So let's go ahead and look to the Lord, and we'll move into the study this morning. Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful for yourself and the relationship that we have with you. We're thankful that because of grace and the work of your son, that we do have a different relationship than Jeremiah did. He was able to meet with the pre-incarnate Son of God, with your son, and your son gave him words that we saw. He wrote down in a book. He had to write it down twice and add to it, as we saw last week. But we're thankful again that even as he had that personal meeting with the pre-incarnate Son of God, that we do have that unique condition where the Son of God indwells us, and so he never leaves us. We don't have to look for an appearance, but he's always with us. And we have that potential when we are spirit-filled to reflect his life and do it from glory to glory to your glory. And we're thankful for that relationship as the Holy Spirit accomplishes that in our lives. So we're thankful for our better thing as we move into the study this morning. But again, we're thankful that we see your faithfulness to your word as we move into the study today. Amen. Okay, I want to go back and we're going to look at Jeremiah 37, and I want to just look at verse 1, and then I'm going to drop back into 2 Kings 24. We looked at that earlier. We looked back there for the setting with Jehoiakim, but now you have a different setting as he moves on. We've seen Zedekiah back earlier and Jeremiah's prophecy concerning Zedekiah. But as we come to 37:1, and King Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Kaniah, the son of Jehoiakim. And we've commented on this Kaniah. We've seen him before. He has the name Kaniah here, another spelling, Jeconiah. And we've also seen this man, he's also referred to as Jehoiakim or Jehoiachin. And so he's, as we observe him. But Kaniah, he's the son of Jehoiakim, this Kaniah is. Now back in chapter 22, Jeremiah was to write this man childless. And so this man, at this point, the legal right to the throne came down through Solomon. And just by way of review quickly, came down through Solomon. You have that genealogy in Matthew's gospel in Matthew chapter 1. And you come down through there and you come down to David and you see David moves through Solomon. Then you go down a few generations and finally you come down to this Kaniah, this Jeconiah, this Jehoiachin. And he's the one who's written childless. Now he had sons. He did have sons, but he was carried off, we'll notice in a moment, into Babylon. And so as he was carried off, he's carried into captivity and his sons with him. But instead of his reign, we'll notice also that Nebuchadnezzar removed him after a very short reign. And he removed him down to Babylon, and he set up Zedekiah. And we'll take a look at that. Zedekiah's name originally was not Zedekiah, it was Mattaniah. And we'll take a look and see that. But Nebuchadnezzar set up this fellow to be king. Now, he was not related, he wasn't a son of Jehoiakim, who had reigned, but he sets up Jehoiakim's brother Zedekiah to be on the throne. And he's the last one who's going to sit on the throne of Israel. You will have a governor established after this in the land, after the removal of most of the people, all of the people who were skilled, all of the people who had authority, anybody who was a warfaring man, Nebuchadnezzar removed them all. And left those who were not capable of much, left them in the land, but he did destroy the land just as Jehovah said he would. But this morning we pick up. I want to go back to 2 Kings 24, and I think just to set the background for this king, we've mentioned him before, and we've mentioned this before. I kind of skimmed through here last week. But if you bear with me, I think I'll read a lot of this chapter because it does give you the background as to what's happening in Jeremiah 37 as well as other places with reference to this fellow Zedekiah. Now Zedekiah, the reason we come here now is because he comes back to the beginning of his reign. And so we see that he was set upon the throne. And so I'm going in 2 Kings chapter 24, I'm going to begin in verse 5. And you have other kings before, but of the sons of Josiah, we see Jehoiakim coming up in verse 5. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin his son reigned in his stead. And the king of Egypt came not again any more out of his land, for the king of Babylon had taken from the river of Egypt, from the Nile, unto the river Euphrates, all that pertained to the king of Egypt. And so up to this point, Israel had been kind of harassed by Pharaoh Necho, and that was an ongoing thing. But now, when Jehoiakim dies, Jehoiachin comes on the scene. Now you have Nebuchadnezzar taking over the area. Verse 8, Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign, and reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. And this, his mother's name was Nehushta, and the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, according to all that his father had done. And so again, you just have a string of evil kings in the southern kingdom, just as you did mostly in the northern kingdom. They were evil because they had the law, but they didn't keep it. And they didn't respond as Josiah did when they found the law. He started to reign at age 8, but the law had not been, they hadn't lived by the law, and they found it put away in the temple. So now he changes, but you have all of these kings, these offspring who were not good. Now in verse 10, at that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city, and his servants did besiege it. And Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his princes and his eunuchs, and the king of Babylon took him in the 8th year of his reign. Now, this is not dealing with Jehoiachin here. It's not Jehoiachin only reigned 3 months. It almost sounds like it's his 8th year, but this is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. And so it's not Jehoiachin. He only reigns 3 months, 18 years old, not a lot of insight, but notice him, he carried out thence, this is Nebuchadnezzar, all the treasures of the house of Jehovah and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of Jehovah, as Jehovah had said. And he carried away all Jerusalem, and all the princes, and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen, even smiths. None remained save the poorest sort of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon, and the king's mother, and the king's wives, and his officers or eunuchs, and the mighty of the land, those he carried he into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. And all the men of might, even 7,000, and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, all that were strong and apt for war, even them that the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's son, king in his stead. Now, it's kind of interesting. We'll pause. We won't go through all of these names. But Mattaniah was a gift from God, was the name, meaning of the name. Interesting, his name, but he was not a good fellow, even so. But he was Jehoiachin's father's brother. So he's the uncle of Jehoiachin. But he made him king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah, which is Jehovah's righteous. And so he had a good name, but he didn't live in the realm where he recognized that Jehovah is righteous. And so Nebuchadnezzar changed his name, though. Now Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hamutal, and the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna, another Jeremiah. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. And through the anger of Jehovah, it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah, until he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So he wasn't going to go down easy. And so that's the background here. The next chapter does go on and describe Nebuchadnezzar's taking of Jerusalem. But we'll save that for chapter 38, and we'll see the destruction of the southern kingdom and Jerusalem at that time. But Zedekiah was not a good king, but he comes in. He's not much older than Jehoiachin was himself, but Nebuchadnezzar sets him up as king over the southern kingdom. He's not a very good king. We'll see as we go through the text today. He's not a good king at all. He's not a very strong king. He actually doesn't have much backbone, and he's kind of pushed around some by those who are there, who are with in his court. Now, we're in Jeremiah 37, and so let's go back to Jeremiah 37, and we will pick up in verse 2. We see the setting, though, that it was when Zedekiah was made king over the land of Judah at this time. But at this time, down through verse 5, we see something of Zedekiah, reference to Zedekiah's reign, and we do find that once in a while Zedekiah does have a spot where he wants to know if Jehovah what's going on, and that's what he's going to do in this section here. And Jeremiah makes it very clear that he is free. He's not in bond. He's not imprisoned at this point yet. And so he's free to come and go, and that's the thing that will be said about him. But as we come into verse 2, we do see what was spoken to Jeremiah. But neither he, and this is Zedekiah, neither he nor his servants nor the people of the land did hearken unto the words that came from Jehovah, which he spake by the prophet, and really by the hand of the prophet Jeremiah. But Jeremiah had spoken these words, and nobody responded. So they had warning, they had specific warning and instruction, but they did nothing to be obedient to listen to it. And so they continued to break the law that was given to them. And so now we do see that Zedekiah does want some prayer. And if we were to go back to Ezekiel at this time, we can go to Ezekiel chapter 34, and you see there it speaks of the priesthood, and it calls them the shepherds of Israel. They were bad. They were not. They had turned against Jehovah, and they had afflicted the people with their lack of relationship to Jehovah, as they were supposed to have had, and leading the people. But we'll see here that instead of going to the priest to communicate for the people, Zedekiah goes to the prophet, to Jeremiah. And so in verse 3, and Zedekiah the king sent Jehukal the son of Shelemiah, and Zephaniah the son of Maaseiah, the priest, to the prophet Jeremiah. So he passes by the priest, Maaseiah. There is a priest involved here, but he sends to Jeremiah the prophet and says, "Pray now unto Jehovah our Elohim for us." Now, this is one place where he does recognize, or he states that Jehovah is their Elohim, and he wants Jeremiah to communicate for them at this time. And Jeremiah came, as we come to verse 4, but we see that Jeremiah is free to come and go. And so Jeremiah came in and went out among the people, for they had not put him into prison. So they hadn't put him into prison yet, but he will end up there. But Jeremiah is doing what God tells him to do. He's spoken the words of God to this people, Do they pay attention? No, they don't. But now, Zedekiah, he really does. He's kind of concerned at times about what Jehovah says. And so he wants some prayer from, and in the Old Testament sense of communication, they were supposed to go through the priest, you would think. But here they come to the prophet, though, and ask him to pray. And so Jeremiah is free to move about. Now, in verse 5, we can go back to 2 Kings 24, where we saw Nebuchadnezzar, and well, we saw Nebuchadnezzar around the city. But now Zedekiah, he would be anticipating maybe help from Egypt, and that's the next thing that he brings up here with the departure of the Chaldeans because of the Egyptians. Thus saith Jehovah, the Elohim of Israel, thus shall I skipped over 6, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to, in fact, I skipped verse 5. We went down to verse 7. Okay, then Pharaoh's army was come forth out of Egypt. And when the Chaldeans that besieged Jerusalem heard tidings of them, they departed from Jerusalem. So they got out of Jerusalem. They left Jerusalem sitting. Now, that kind of gives these Jews in the southern kingdom some confidence that maybe somehow they will escape from Babylon and from the Babylonian, ultimate Babylonian captivity. Now this brings us down to verses 6 through 15, where you have the message of the fall of Judah, and which results in the incarceration of Jeremiah the prophet once more. But in verse 6, now we have another appearance of the word of Jehovah. And so it says in verse 6, then was the word of Jehovah unto the prophet Jeremiah. And so you have the pre-incarnate Son of God appearing with Jeremiah and speaking with him, saying, as he was with him. And so he speaks to him, and thus saith Jehovah, the Elohim of Israel, thus shall ye say to the king of Judah that sent you unto me to inquire of me. Now, Jeremiah doesn't say that he went out to whether he prayed for them or not, but he does, you do have, Jehovah's quite aware. I mean, and so he is omniscient. He knows what the king of Judah asked of Jeremiah. And so he says, behold, Pharaoh's army, which has come forth to help you. So see, they're anticipating some help now from Pharaoh Necho, or from the Pharaoh at this time, to come to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land. And so there's the prophecy that they're not coming to deliver these people from the Babylonians. Now the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, remember, he drove Egypt out, and from the Nile all the way to the Euphrates, he had rule over it all. But his armies fled with the Egyptians coming. But it's not, it's going to be they're not going to be able to deliver them from the enemy, from Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the prophecy continues in verse 8 concerning the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, and the Chaldeans shall come again. So they fled away when they heard the Egyptians were coming. But they're going to come again and fight against this city, that is Jerusalem, and take it and burn it with fire. And so just as it's been stated before, the city will be burned with fire and destroyed. And so Jehovah warns them not to deceive themselves now. Thus saith Jehovah, deceive not yourselves. Don't deceive your souls, saying, the Chaldeans shall surely depart from us, for they shall not depart. Don't say it, because they're not going to stay away. They will be back. And that's the thing they're warned about. For though ye had smitten the whole army of the Chaldeans that fight against you. And so here, Zedekiah, he rebels against Babylon. He rebels against the Chaldeans, and he continues to do so. But even if he had been able to defeat them, Jehovah says, and there remained but wounded men, or men who were thrust through among them, yet should they rise up every man in his tent and burn this city with fire. It doesn't matter what Judah did. If they conquered the Babylonian armies and left them the wounded laying in their tents, they would still get up and burn the city. The city was going to be burned, no matter what. And so even if they did conquer them, it might have been a potential, but it wasn't the actual. It didn't happen, and it wasn't going to happen. But even if that was the case, but there were those who would prophesy otherwise, that they could get rid of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians. Now, the departure of the Babylonians is something that we do find in verses 11 through 15 in this section, though, where it results in Jeremiah being imprisoned. And it came to pass that when the army of the Chaldeans was, it says, when they were broken up from Jerusalem, they ascended up from Jerusalem for fear of Pharaoh's army. And so this did happen. Then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin. So they went to the other area of the southern kingdom. He removed himself from Jerusalem. Notice why he did so. He did so to separate himself thence, or to slip away in the midst of the people. So he was clearing out, because the Chaldeans are coming back. And so he gets out of the city. And when he comes to the gate of Benjamin, though, notice what takes place here. You have they think that he's going to take off with the Chaldeans and join with them. And so when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Erijah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah. And he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, "Thou fallest away to the Chaldeans." And so he accuses him of fleeing with the Chaldeans. Then said Jeremiah, "It's a lie. It's false. It's a lie. I fall not away to the Chaldeans." But he hearkened not to him. He wouldn't listen, even though he said he wasn't going with the Chaldeans. So Erijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. And so this is going to get Jeremiah into some problems now. And so notice verse 15, what the princes do to him. Now Jeremiah, we won't go through all of the abuse that Jeremiah went through this morning. We've seen a lot of it up to this point. But he has suffered in many various ways, many things that would be awful in multiple ways. But in verse 15, "Wherefore the princes were wroth and angry with Jeremiah, and smote him, and put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe. For they had made that the prison." Now, in those days, when they had a prison, they didn't have the county jail or the federal prison or something. They would just take a house or someplace, a room someplace, and turn it into a prison. And they would make cells there, whatever. They would set it up as a prison and lock somebody away. Now, we saw Jeremiah was put in the courtyard back in chapter 32, in the courtyard another time. But here he's going to go into it. It's going to be described as a dungeon, and in verse 16. So in verse 16 down through 21, Zedekiah inquires of Jeremiah concerning prophecy from Jehovah and his improved treatment there. And so when Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon, it says, and so the dungeon is just describes a house of a pit. And so it's a pit that he's cast into, and into the cabins, it says. Well, cabins, we could probably say there were cells in this pit where he was cast. And Jeremiah had remained there many days. So he's put into this pit for many days, and it's not a very healthy place to be, we'll see. Now, when we move on, we see Zedekiah now. He's still concerned now. So Jeremiah's been locked up for some time. And now the king finally sends for Jeremiah, and he's going to be brought to Zedekiah because he has some questions about Jehovah's word to Jeremiah and his response. So then Zedekiah, the king sent and took him out. And the king asked him secretly in his house. So this is he doesn't do it publicly. He wants to know, though, in secret, and said, is there any word from Jehovah? And so we've seen that the word from Jehovah was to Jeremiah. And so he did speak to him. There has been word. He's reported the word. He suffered because of the word from Jehovah. But is there any word from Jehovah? And Jeremiah said, there is. For, said he, thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon. So this is the message that he's had. It's not a popular message to Zedekiah at all. Not what he wants to hear. But he describes to him how he's going to be taken into captivity himself. There's no way of avoiding it. He's going to be taken to Babylon. And some atrocities are going to be done to him there, but his end is not going to be real bad. He just won't see much of what's happening, though. But as we go on to verse 18, when Jeremiah tells him that Zedekiah is going into captivity, now Jeremiah is going to get his digs in on Zedekiah. Moreover, Jeremiah said unto King Zedekiah, what have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people? So he hasn't done anything. And so he's suffering for, really, because he's Jehovah's prophet, and he's just speaking the words of Jehovah. And he's carrying out what Jehovah had for him to do, but he is suffering in the process for it. And so, what have I done that you put me in prison? He hasn't done anything personally to Zedekiah. He's just given him the words that Jehovah has spoken. Nothing against the servants and his household, or against the people of Judah, but he's been put into prison. And so it's something that it disturbs him, because it's he is suffering for really just as a prophet, and he's been suffering as a prophet throughout his career. And so it's no wonder that he's referred to but he is a suffering prophet. And so he's always going through difficult things because of Judah and the people of Judah, the king on down to the lowest of the people. Now he has a question to Zedekiah, a further question. Why did you put me into prison first of all? Now, where are now your prophets, which prophesied unto you, saying? And so Zedekiah, he had his own personal prophets, and they would tell him what he wanted to hear. You won't go into captivity. The king of Babylon shall not come up against you, nor against this land. Where are they now? Well, they're not there. And so, but he sends for Zedekiah. Zedekiah sends for Jeremiah the prophet now, though, the real prophet. But he had his own prophets, and you can see that. You had that back in 1 Kings 22. You had the prophets there. They wanted to, and Ahab had to die, but they beat up God's spokesman, Micaiah, but they... But anyway, you had a lying a demon come and speak to the prophets of the northern kingdom, and so they were lying through the prophets there, but they stood up against Jehovah's prophet there as well. But now these prophets are gone, and so as we come to the 20th verse, we do see now that Jeremiah. He says, therefore now, hear now, I pray thee, O my Adonai, the king. And so he recognizes him as his master, as the master king, the king. But he says, let my supplication, I pray thee, be accepted before thee. And so what is his supplication? That thou cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there. And so he doesn't want to die in this pit, in the cell in the pit. And it's not a very nice place, not very healthy, apparently. And so we see that Zedekiah did listen to him, and he did give him made things a little bit better at this point in time. Then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison. And we saw him in a court of the prison back in chapter 32. And so he's not down in the pit now, but yet he still keeps him incarcerated and keeps him in, keeps him under control here, and that they should give him daily a piece, just a round of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent. So he did get something to eat. So down in the pit, it must not have been so good, but he got just a little, a piece of bread a day to eat. And thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. And so this is where we leave Jeremiah off at this point. At the end of this chapter, he's in prison. Now the next chapter, you have a lot of activity going on with Zedekiah and his interaction with Jeremiah again, and some of the things as Jeremiah continues to give him warning, but he's left in prison, and we're going to see that's where he is until the Chaldeans come, until Nebuchadnezzar's forces come and take Jerusalem. And I'm going to just more or less just kind of survey this because of time, but we're going to scoot right through here for a moment and pick up for the rest of our time. And so you have, in as we come into the chapter, then Shephatiah, the son of Mattan, and Gedaliah, the son of Pashur, we've seen these names before, and Jukal, the son of Shelemiah, and Pashur, the son of Malchiah, heard the words that Jeremiah had spoken unto all the people, saying, "Thus saith Jehovah, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence." And we've seen those terms before, back in 21:9, and they were going to die, and so if they would be slain in battle, they would have famine, and they would be sick as a result. But all of these things would accompany war. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life, and this is the word nephesh, soul, but I think it represents life here as they translated it, for a prey, and shall live. And so he would live physically if he did head off to Babylon. So they have that choice. Thus saith Jehovah, this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall be taken. Therefore the princes said unto the king, "We beseech thee, let this man be put to death." And so that's the result of the warning that has been given. And as he continues to give the word of Jehovah to the people and pertaining to the king. I just want to step back there for one moment with a thought on verse 2, you have a potential here. You have a potential versus the actual. And the potential was, if they had fled and gone with the king, or if they had just gone with the Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, they would live. But if they don't, they're going to be slaughtered. And so there was a possibility, but they didn't make the right choice, and so they ended up suffering as a result, suffering the consequences as a result. So we don't see them going with Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, but there was that possibility. There was a potential for them to preserve their life here longer. But the princes, they hear what Jeremiah has said, and they want him executed. "For thus he weakeneth the hands of the men," and these would be the high men of war that remain in this city, "and the hands of all the people in speaking such words unto them. For this man seeketh not the welfare," he doesn't, and it's really, that doesn't seek the peace of this people, but the hurt. And so they refuse to listen, they refuse to accept what Jeremiah has spoken to them concerning the coming and impending judgment upon the city and upon the kingdom and those within it. So as you move on, then Zedekiah the king said, "Behold, he is in your hand, for the king is not he that can do anything against you." And so the king, what kind of a king is he? Well, he's pretty wimpy, because he says he can't. He turns him over to the princes and to these officials. Then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah the son of Hemelech, and was in the court. And it says the court. This is a cistern. Again, this is a bore. This is a pit. And so it's looking down at a pit, though, of the prison. So they put him in a worse spot in the prison, in this other prison, and they let down Jeremiah with cords. And in the dungeon, there was no water but mire. So he was put down in the mud. And so Jeremiah sunk in the mud. And so here's Jeremiah down in a pit now. You think you have it bad? He's stuck down in this cistern and this pit, sinking in mud. Now when Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs, which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon, down in the pit here, the king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying, "My Adonai the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the pit," or the dungeon, the pit, that is. "And he will die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no more bread in the city." So now they're going to be under siege again, and they're running out of food, running out of bread, and there's no bread left for Jeremiah. And Ebed-Melech does stand in between Jeremiah and the king for Jeremiah's good. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, "Take from hence 30 men with you, and take them in your hand, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the pit before he die." And so he's to pull him up and deliver him. So Ebed-Melech did just this. He took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took thence old cast clouts and old rotten rags and let them down by cords into the pit to Jeremiah. And Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian said unto Jeremiah, "Put now these old cast clouts and rotten rags under your armholes, under the cords." And as Jeremiah did so they drew up Jeremiah with cords and took him up out of the pit, and Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. So he's still in prison, but he's at least delivered from the worst part of it, down in the pit and down in the mud. Now Zedekiah is going to see Jeremiah again. And so this is going to be, it says, "Then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet unto him into the third entry that is in the house of Jehovah. And the king said unto Jeremiah, I will ask thee a thing, hide nothing from me." Now, Jeremiah, he said, he'll do it, but he needs some guarantees. "Then Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, if I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? And if I give thee counsel, will you not hearken unto me?" So Zedekiah the king swore secretly, and so he did it for himself unto Jeremiah, saying, "As Jehovah liveth, that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life." And so again, they're seeking his life. His nephesh, I believe it is. "Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, Thus saith Jehovah the Elohim of Sabaoth." We've seen this title used, turned around a couple of times before at least, but usually it's Jehovah Sabaoth, but he's the Elohim of over the heavenly armies, the God of Israel, the Elohim of Israel. "If you will assuredly go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live." And so you will live. "And this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live and thine house." And so all he needs to do is, with his princes, is he just needs to go with the king of Babylon. So another potential here. And that's the potential, but it's not the but the actual is going to be different, as we'll see in the next chapter. But it's the potential is that they could have just voluntarily gone, and the city could have been preserved. But then God had said it was going to be burned, so it is going to be burned. But if thou wilt not go forth, and that's what he says, to the king of Babylon's princes, then shall this city be given into the hand of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. And so you emphatically, you won't escape if you don't go with them. And again, that's just that's the potential versus the actual. And Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I am afraid if the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans, and so lest they deliver me into their hand and they mock me. So he's afraid if he goes to the Chaldeans and if he goes to Babylon, what's going to happen? The Babylonians are going to turn him over to the Jews who are already there, and they're going to begin to mock him. Well, that's pretty sad. Not a very strong king, and so he's afraid of being mocked at this point. But Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of Jehovah which I speak unto thee, so it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. So he repeats him what he had said. But just listen to him. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that Jehovah hath showed me. And so this is, and so if they don't go, this is what Jehovah has been telling him. This has been the message. And behold, all the women that are left in the king of Judah's house shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes. And those women shall say, thy friends have set thee on. And so the men of peace, they've set thee on and have prevailed against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire, in the mud, and they are turned away back. So they shall bring all of thy wives and thy sons to the Chaldeans, and you shall not escape out of their hand. But the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause, but the king of Babylon. But notice the responsibility the king has here, though, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. So he did have a responsibility, but if he just has gone peacefully, the city would not have been destroyed. But he has been rebelling since he was established as king. Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know concerning these words, and thou shalt not die. And so he promised that he would not kill Jeremiah. But now if Jeremiah lets somebody know these things, then he will die. And so he just don't tell anybody. But if the princes hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death. Also what the king hath said unto thee. Then thou shalt say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then came all the princes. So just as was anticipated, the princes do come. And as they come, then came the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So they left. And so they were silent with him, for the matter was not perceived. So notice where Jeremiah is now. So we come to verse 28. We've seen down through the chapter that he was imprisoned. He was pulled out of the pit, in the mud in the pit. But now, so Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison until the day that Jerusalem was taken. And he was there when Jerusalem was taken. So Zedekiah didn't listen. The people didn't listen. And they could have gone and spared the city and spared the lives of many. But they insisted on rebelling and opposing the king, and left Jeremiah there in prison. But when Jerusalem was taken and they were taken captive, here's poor old Jeremiah. He's still in prison in Jerusalem. And that's where we're going to leave him off there. But in the 39th chapter, we'll see the Nebuchadnezzar taking the city of Jerusalem. And as he takes them, it's going to happen just as was prophesied. Now you look at Jeremiah. Jeremiah went through a great deal of suffering, and it wasn't because of anything Jeremiah did personally. And so he suffered some things, and he suffered at the hands of the king of Judah, who should have known better. But the king of Judah did not, he didn't like the message, so he lets Jeremiah suffer, and he brings suffering to him. So all, throughout Jeremiah's career, he went through a great deal. And so he is, he really was a suffering prophet, the suffering servant of Jehovah, as he is persecuted often because of his message and because of what he did. And so when you stop and think about it, we have a better situation than Jeremiah did. Jeremiah, he suffered as the prophet because of his prophecy. Sometimes we may suffer as Christians too. And I just was reminded that in Peter, Peter suffered. And so he says that, but if you suffer, you want to suffer for righteousness' sake, not because you deserve it. And so if you suffer for well-doing rather than evil-doing, that's the way it should be. And that's a possibility that we can go through oftentimes. Jeremiah, he didn't deserve it. He suffered really for righteousness as an Old Testament saint. We as New Testament saints, we may suffer. But if we suffer according to the will of God, then that's something that's not a bad thing. And so just thought I would pause to just draw a little contrast. When you stop and look at the Old Testament saint, they suffered persecution. When a prophetess Jeremiah suffered much persecution. But today we're not promised an easy life as Christians. And 2 Timothy, we'll just remind ourselves again of 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9. He says, "Wherefore I suffer bad." He suffers that which is lacking in character, as an evildoer, as one who's doing bad, even unto bonds, but the word of God is not bound. So Paul suffered, but he suffered, and especially when he gave his gospel, including the resurrection of Christ, he suffered, and he suffered for righteousness at that point. But even more than that, we find in 2 Timothy also, in chapter 3 and verse 12, Paul was able to say that, "Yea, and all they that will," that is, they desire, they have a desirous will, they want to live godly, "in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." So we're not exempt from persecution, but we have better resources than the prophet Jeremiah did when he suffered persecution as an Old Testament saint. He suffered, and he suffered a lot, and he suffered at the hands of men as a prophet of Jehovah. He gave the message, he warned them, and just as he promised, just as God said, though, again, we see that God is true to his word and dependable. The time came, and we'll see that in the next chapter of Jeremiah, that God is dependable. He promised it. He gave the prophecy that Jerusalem would fall, that the king would be taken into captivity, the southern kingdom would fall, and that is precisely what happened. And we'll see it just according as God had promised it to them. And so we can see in the Old Testament that God does keep his word. And so he does do that. He is true. And so he is dependable. We can trust him, not just in dealing with evil to deal with it, but he also will keep all of his promises to those in the Old Testament as well as to us. And so we'll stop at that point. And right about on time. So, Father, we're thankful again for your word as we've been able to look into it, even looking back here at the Old Testament and these counts, the account of an Old Testament prophet, an Old Testament saint dealing with those in the Old Testament who were evil and who were not believers, mostly. And so we're thankful again that just as you promised, you did fulfill your word then. And just as you fulfilled your word dealing with the conquest of the southern kingdom and Judah and the king and all that was involved there, just as you fulfilled all of that, we know that you will fulfill all of your promises that you've made. And again, we're thankful that we don't anticipate tribulation. We don't anticipate those sort of things, but we do anticipate your son coming to catch us up to be with himself, and that we will always be with him. And so we're thankful for that prospect and that hope. Amen.